org.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Bugs are everywhere. So why has Western culture developed such a strong aversion to them? And how do bugs differ from insects anyway? Joining us now to talk bugs slash insects, just as we embark on the season of bugs slash insects in Ohio, is Mark Berman, better known as the Bugman. Mark is the founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises, which has served thousands of schools, libraries, and daycare centers in New England, California, New Jersey, and Ohio since its inception in 1996. I saw Mark last year when he gave a talk on bugs at the TEDx Columbus conference. So you can go online and see that, I believe, if you want. Go to TEDx Columbus and you can see Mark Berman's talk. But for now, you can listen to us. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
Question for our listeners. Are you afraid of bugs, or do you think they're misunderstood? Give us a call and let us know how you get along with bugs.
Can I change the question to the listeners?
Yes.
What bugs do you like the most?
Oh, Mr. Positive.
What
okay.
is it that you like
What's
about bugs
What's your favorite
the most?
Bug? Okay, give us a call.
How many times you hear, do they bite, or what? I'm afraid of it, and it's just the
negative,
whole
negative, negative.
We got to change the conversation.
614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go online and pop your question or comment in our Facebook page, and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. All right, so why should we care about bugs and insects? It seems like most of our culture is bent on figuring out how to get rid of them, like the ants and the bees that bore holes in your fences and stuff like that.
Yeah, and when you go to learn in college about bugs, most of the time you're going to go to a land-grant university, and that's the first thing they teach you is how to kill bugs. And I spent a lot of my collegiate career learning about how to kill bugs, and I'm real good at it if you ever need to kill bugs. But I've always wondered why we aren't just appreciating the world we live in a lot more. You were telling me before we started that you have arachnophobia, and there's a good reason
a
for it.
A little bit.
Okay,
so I've gotten
a lot
better.
What happened to you?
Oh, I'm not going to talk. There's too
well,
long.
Everybody...
One time when I was little, a lady started beating me over the head with a dust mop because I had a daddy long legs on my head. But that's just one example.
She's
about in the first grade.
Oh, well, that's very traumatic. You should have a problem
it was.
With her and dust mops and daddy long legs.
It but was that's just one example.
Well, but that's the thing is that everybody sort of has what they think is a story of something really traumatic that happened with bugs. My brother threw a praying mantis down my shirt or something like that. But usually the bugs weren't the cause of the trauma, but they get translated into it and they can't defend themselves. And so it's very easy to hate bugs and especially spiders because they don't have a face. And it's always...
Oh, yes, they do. It's mm-hmm. furry and...
well,
I mean,
you're
every
furry,
spider-
too, but I mean, they have... Spiders have eyes and a mouth that aren't kind of oriented like most faces are. And so when you look at a spider... Well, with jumping spiders, it's a little bit different. But with most spiders, you don't get... I'll stop making that... We're on the radio,
jumping
and so people
spiders.
Can't see. Oh, jumping spiders are cute. I have one. I'll show you if you want. But they're and actually, I went out specially yesterday to collect it just for you because they're one of the cutest bugs that we've got around here. And most people, I mean, I saw the look on your face when you said it, and I've seen that look at least a million times about people when you say spider. And most of the time, there's no real reason for it. Other than that, there's a lot of people who have a lot invested in you being afraid of spiders. They spend a lot of money. They spend a lot of time to scare you. And frankly, people would rather be scared than educated. You don't have to think to be – actually, usually being scared means you're not thinking. But to be educated means you have to think, and then you understand the world a lot better when you do.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest this hour is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprise.
Well, we're in the process of changing the name to just Bugman Education because you and also the reader beforehand demonstrated one of the problems with making up a name for your company, and Enterprise is a cute pun on enterprise and
right.
entomologist, which is what a bug person does. But since 1996, I can't tell you the few times it's been spelled right and the many times it's been spelled wrong. And so I think we're just going to make it Bugman Education.
Or it was spelled right for me, but I just went ahead and
set it wrong.
It
gets edited all the time.
Corey in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Yes, how are you today? You guys have a great show, and I appreciate you taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I've lived in Florida, out west in Idaho, and I just recently moved here in Ohio, and I saw this massive creature walking across our floor one day, and turns out it's a silverfish, and the ones here in Ohio must train with the Buckeyes because it is huge. It's nothing like one of the normal silverfish that I've seen before. Why is it so big? Is it a different species? Why is it covered in huge hairs?
Well, let's find out what a silverfish is first. Good question, Corey, though.
A silverfish is a small insect that likes to run around in dark, mostly moist places in basements, and it actually eats bookbinding paste and wallpaper paste, and they can be in big numbers. They can be kind of a pest. They're usually an indicator of moisture in the area. Why they're so big here, I think he was just paying more attention here.
Corey, get out of the basement.
Well, I don't know. Like, I guess I've just seen, like I said, different species, but it was huge and it scared us seriously. So just wondering, and thanks for taking the call.
Well, it's harmless, Corey, but it might be an indicator of other things that are around there that are probably harmless too, but you have to decide where you draw the line with uninvited guests.
Before we move on, I want to get to some callers, but what is the difference between bugs and insects? Can insects be bugs, but bugs, not all bugs are insects?
Yeah, during our educational programs, there's a whole spiel that I like to go through that's real funny about how your little sister can be a bug, your big brother can be a bug, you can have a bug in your stomach, be snug as a bug in a rug, whatever. You're bugging me, you got bug eyes, whatever. And a bed bug is actually a bug, but a ladybug is not a bug. And the difference is, the problem is the difference between the way scientists talk and the way regular people talk. And bug is used as an officially scientific term among scientists and as a colloquialism or a casual language among regular people. The fact is that there's a small group of insects in the order Hemiptera, which means half-wing. The picture that you put on the promo on your website for the promo for this is actually a picture of a true bug. And if anybody's looking at it, you can see it sort of looks like it has an X in its wings. It looks like its wings are sort of made out of two different materials. And so it's called half-wing or Hemiptera. Hemi is half and P-T-E-R-A is wing. And so that is a diagnostic characteristic of bugs. They have gradual metamorphosis, which means they don't have a pupa. They just go through stages that look more and more like an adult until they grow up. And they have piercing, sucking mouth parts, my favorite kind, which means they have, but that's kind of a personal thing. They have a rostrum, which is like a beak that they jab into their food. And since they can't chew their food, just like spiders, and this is an important thing about spiders and other bugs that a lot of people are afraid of, that since they can't chew, they inject enzymes into their food, turn it into mush, and then slurp it up. And in the case of bugs, most of them won't use that for defense. In the case of spiders, it's always a last resort for defense. Spiders aren't bugs, but there's a small group of insects that are bugs. If you know that, it's good that you can say, oh, there's a bug and there's not a bug. And if you don't know that, then anything that bugs you or looks like a bug or you think is a bug is a bug. And as long as people understand.
Speaking of bugs, Rick in Sunbury, you're on the air. You want to talk about mosquitoes?
Yeah. Well, before I get to that, I want to say that I heard on your show, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, a guy by the name of Mark Moffat, who wrote a book called Adventures in Ants.
Good friend, big hero.
And and I bought that book and I read it, and I just think ants are the coolest thing. I think they're infinitely as interesting as human beings.
Wow.
Less globally destructive too. Actually, yeah. E.O. Wilson was sort of the first person to bring the world of ants and superorganisms like that to the general public. Mark Moffat is an extremely colorful character. He's had over 500 photos published in National Geographic, and I had a chance to spend some time with him at a conference last summer, and he's a really great guy, and the stories he tells about ants are unbelievable. So you're right. I agree with you.
And then the part about mosquitoes, I sort of grew up as a kid thinking that somehow God had made a mistake, and, you know, the mosquitoes were clearly come from Satan. I don't know, maybe my mother helped me out with that opinion. But there was a time about 10 years ago when I was down in Belize doing mission work, and the sleeping accommodations were extremely crude. It was basically hammocks and grass huts. And I had made a really bad mistake. I'd forgotten my mosquito repellent. So at nighttime, I'm laying in this hammock. It's blistering hot, and the mosquitoes are eating me alive. And I've never been so uncomfortable in my life. And then suddenly I realized that I wasn't there for my comfort. I was there for the people of the village. And ever since then, I've had a much kinder opinion about mosquitoes. And, you know, I know that bats eat them and they're very important to the ecosystem. But I was never able to accept that until I saw that they were just doing their thing and that, you know, it was my fault that I hadn't bought my mosquito repellent along. So I came to a realization. I call it a spiritual realization about what's really important, and hating mosquitoes is just not worth it.
I think probably hating in general is just not worth it,
but
to be a little more global about it. But I actually did a fair amount of graduate research on mosquitoes, spent some time in Florida in the field, digging through tire piles, looking for mosquitoes while swatting them the whole way. And Anne had mentioned she doesn't like to kill bugs if she can help it. But boy, I'll tell you, when they're coming to suck your blood and you don't know what kind of diseases they're going to spread, it's pretty easy to want to swat them. Also, by the way, mosquitoes, everybody says, well, what's their purpose since all they seem to do is suck blood? And I always ask, well, what's your purpose since all we seem to do is destroy the world? I'm sitting here talking and Anne is transfixed on this little jumping spider that's running
it's
around.
It's not that little.
Okay. It is too little. Okay, but wait a minute.
If people want to look at it, maybe they have a camera on it and you can see it on television. It keeps looking at
me. Stop. Yeah, and actually it does keep looking at you. It has very good eyesight. We'll come back to it. But listen, mosquitoes, and we're talking about mosquitoes now, folks.
Okay.
But mosquitoes actually provide food for almost the whole aquatic ecosystem since their babies live. All right, listen, I'll put the lid on.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Since their babies live in water, they're really food for a lot of different things. But then also when somebody asks me what's a mosquito's purpose, I always think about the other mosquitoes. And it's really hard to justify a mosquito's purpose to the other mosquitoes, but I'm sure they have their little social interactions as well.
They have feelings too?
Well, you have to assume they have feelings too. I mean, I don't know why anybody would assume otherwise. And we do a lot, you know, our company has been, since 96, we've been primarily an educational company. And one of the things I've noticed over the past decade is the lack of focus on enrichment in education. And as budgetary and curricular demands get stronger, teachers get pulled in more different directions and budgets get pulled in more different directions. Enrichment programs like ours, which I think are critical and you won't get out of books, to teach you that there are things like mosquitoes that you don't have to justify in terms of humans. Kids rarely get that idea. And as a matter of fact, when we were growing up, the whole idea of ecology wasn't even that big of a deal. And so people would think of tree huggers mostly when they thought of ecology. And by the way, do you know what the root for ecology, you know, ecos, what that means? It's a Greek root that means, you know, the OGY words, that's what scientists do.
Ology,
they look at something.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, they look at something and say, OG. Why is that? Because then you ask the question. And so I call them OGY words. But ecos, what do you think that means? I mean, bios is life and
sounds like ethos, but no, I don't know.
It's the Greek word for home.
Ah.
And so an ecosystem is a system of homes, and ecology is a study of where things live and why. And it's something that we just really don't teach effectively to young people, and you're not going to learn it so much in a book. But when you have a little dish of challenging animals down in front of kids that are safe and durable and interesting and big enough that they can see comfortably with their eyes, and then you make them think about them and ask questions about them, then it sort of changes the first impression you have of it. That's why I got the spider out, was to change your first impression. So far, it hasn't worked.
Well, hey, Rick, thanks a lot for the call. We got to move on, but I appreciate it. My guest is Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprise, and he does have some little guess. And actually, I'd rather know where that spider is. Thank you very much.
If you want
to see what I'm seeing right now, you can go to WOSU.org/allsides. You don't have to get it out.
Don't worry. Watch
the stream. So we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Facebook goes public. The world's largest social network readies its IPO. Do you want in? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. It's 78 degrees in downtown Columbus and sunshine for today, but showers and thunderstorms moving into the area, mainly after 4 o'clock this afternoon. A high of 82 degrees today. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for tonight, a low of 63 degrees. There's still a chance of rain for Tuesday morning, then clouds and sun in the afternoon, a high of 75. Mostly cloudy skies for Tuesday night, a low of 54 degrees. Some sunshine and cooler on Wednesday, a high of 68. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Okay, my guest this hour, Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprise. We're talking about bugs today. If you have a question or comment for Mark, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you want to see what I'm seeing, or at least, you know, we'll try to describe them. If you can't, you can go to wosu.org/allsides and check out the streaming. Just turn off your radio because it'll be slightly different time. Mark Berman, what's staring at me right now?
Me. Oh, you mean aside from me? That is a baby praying mantis, which is probably a little bit bigger than the size of one that you would find outside right now. Since it's spring, they're all still babies. All the grown-ups died last fall. Laid eggs, died. When this baby is born, it doesn't usually eat the first day, but it's capable of catching a fly 5 minutes after it's born. And it's a really interesting... When I was doing my student teaching, I did kind of this cool little activity that talked about the relationship between prenatal parental care and postnatal parental care. And an animal like a praying mantis will have 400 babies, make egg cases, she'll die, the babies are born, and they're on their own. And when you compare that to something like humans, whose babies, like when we're born, we're completely incapable of doing anything. We can't even communicate our needs effectively. We can communicate that we have needs, but not what they actually are, for almost a year, and can't feed yourself, can't roll over, can't get up, can't walk around. And that thing could catch flies pretty much out of the egg. And when I was doing the activity, student teaching, we also had a baby chick that one of the kids brought in from their farm or something. And it was like a week old or something, and it was noisy and telling you what you wanted. It could feed itself, and it could communicate with its mother. And so it's an interesting sort of juxtaposition, the difference between what we put into development before birth and after birth.
Tim, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for your time. You had asked about an experience with an insect that was less than pleasant. The one I have to describe is an encounter with a stag beetle, I think it was. It's a beetle about, inch to an inch and a half long with a really big pincer on the front. I was coming back home and it was in my vehicle and got on my vehicle, looked down, and there was this huge thing on my shorts, a big thing. And I think it was more just a surprise than anything else. I was able to kind of get it off with a stick of some sort. It left just a tiny little tear in the fabric of the shorts, and then I kind of just dumped it out of the way. But that's kind of, I think that's the worst thing I can remember in terms of any encounter. And again, the bug wasn't doing anything other than just being a bug or an insect, whichever it is.
It sounds so traumatic.
Yeah, it was. I mean, yeah, it was like, ooh.
Do you hate them now?
No.
I think that, we haven't had a 17-year cicada outbreak for a while. There's a small one this year, and there's 17-year cicadas are interesting, and the reason you made me think of them is because I think the only human injury I've ever heard of them causing was when one flew in a trucker's window and sort of got behind his glasses accidentally, and he ended up crashing his truck. But otherwise, they're harmless because everybody freaks out when they're all over the place. It's interesting because the 17-year cicadas go underground for 17 years, crawl up, shed their skin. They're adults for 2 weeks. The eggs hatch 2 weeks later. They crawl underground, stay there for 17 more years. And the ones here were up in, I guess it was 84, and then 17 years after, and then 17 years after that. So I think they're coming back here in 2006 or something. 2016. Every year, they're in a different geographical region of the Northeast. And this year, there's a very small brood emerging in West Virginia and Virginia, mostly in the uplands. And it's one of the smaller geographical areas where they are. But you can go online and search for cicada brood maps. And every year, you could go to a different part of the sort of Northeast, Midwest, and see cicadas coming out in huge numbers. Did you ever get to see an outbreak before, Anne? Of the 17
yes.
or 16. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
And you can eat them too, by the way.
All right. Yeah, you do have a whole show on eating bugs, don't you?
Yes. And it's always ends up being one of our most popular shows. I like Bugovision, where you can see something like this praying mantis that you're eyeing really close up on a big screen, and its face takes up the whole screen, and it takes on a whole new different dimension when they're closer than you'd ever expect you'd get.
Tim, thanks for your call.
Can I talk a little bit more? Just two quick things. One was, in terms of just exploring bugs with my daughters, one thing we really appreciated was getting what we call a bug back. Hello, am I still there?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That just helped in terms of, collecting whatever mostly in the house was. Somebody mentioned the silverfish. That was our latest little catch a few days ago. And just kind of putting them in a safe environment, both for them and for us, so that we can explore them and not be scared by them. And that seems to have helped a little bit, although my daughter's still definitely scared of spiders. And that was, that's a really nice thing to have if anyone has one. The other thing I really wanted to speak about briefly was that I was honored to be part of your audience about a year and a half ago out at the Columbus Public Schools Nature Education Center. And you did such a wonderful job in terms of dealing with a pretty tough crowd in terms of the students. Also, just being so good at expressing a healthy respect for the insects rather than really either loving them too much so that you could be hurt by them when you shouldn't be doing things with them, to being so scared of them that your first response is always to just stomp them. The one thing I can recall, and I thought this was just amazing, you had us to the point where you offered us an option to, pet a hornet with the proper precautions. But it just gives a sense that, insects aren't always dangerous beasts. You just have to be, have a healthy respect for them and, give them their space.
So that was up at Spruce Run, right? That was, I'm sorry, but I think what the gentleman was referring to is up at Spruce Run, where Columbus Public Schools has a really incredible nature center on about a 40 or so acre property, and it's free for the schools to use, and a lot of teachers don't know about it, but we love to do programs up there, and actually I'm in the process of arranging this week or next week with Lisa Cyberling, who's one of the more dynamic educators in Columbus, to go up there and do it again, and he's right. We had a black light set up on sheets. If you ever want to really get a good look at some of the things that live around here that you never see, get a big white. You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
No,
you get a big white sheet and some black lights and the little fluorescent tube screw-in bulbs that they have for the black lights are real bright, and you will not believe the stuff that comes out of the woods on a warm summer night. And this time we had these big hornets. I'd never seen them before, but I knew nothing was going to happen. And so we were letting them walk on our hands and pet them and stuff, and the kids were totally thrilled by it because you end up with so many negative experiences about bugs. And most people I've noticed that when they first look at them, you can't take your eyes off of these things. And so,
well,
I mean,
I love praying mantis.
Yeah. Well, even all, I mean, people just, you want to look
really
and you want to know. And then everybody's got sort of this apprehension in their head that got put there by other people. And when the gentleman was talking about his daughter being really nervous about spiders, and yet he's taking her around and showing her all the really cool things on Earth, I wanted to know about her mom, because I bet her mom's afraid of spiders too.
Tim, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. Take care. Pat in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Oh, hi, Anne. Thank you so much for your show. And Mark, thank you so much for your topic.
I bet.
Hi, I just have a quick comment. My husband used to say, the only thing a creature has is its own life. He would not take it away from it. So I try very hard not to ever kill any insect or bug or anything. That was my only comment.
Well, thank you, Pat.
Thanks. It's a nice thought. I always figure uninvited guests, if it's a bug or Uncle Louie, different level of respect.
You know, it kind of depends.
Sometimes they're a bug, you're a person, and that's just how it goes. But
you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Ento Prize. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call. We still have some calls waiting. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page as well, as did Kimberly. She says, my favorite bugs are lightning bugs. I love sitting on the patio on a summer's evening watching the light show in the evening. And thank you, Kimberly. I think I read something when I was preparing for this where there's some lightning bugs in certain specific places that do kind of lightning bug shows.
There's two places on Earth that are known. Excuse me. And one is in Malaysia, and one is just outside of Gatlinburg in the Smoky Mountains, go figure. And we went last year, a friend of mine, Michelle Harris, she has a company called an environmental education company called Green Matter locally. And she and I went down there and saw these synchronous fireflies. And you go to a clearing in the wood. First of all, you wait in line for hours because there's thousands of people who want to go. Yeah, and actually, in case we brought it up today, I looked up this year. It's always the first week in June, and it's the Sugarlands, I think, Visitor Center in the Smoky Mountains National Park, which is just outside of Gatlinburg. And this year they're doing it differently, where you have to pre-reserve in advance a ticket to get into the parking lot, because it was mayhem last year. I mean, hours and hours.
Well, what do you see?
Well, what they do is they run a show. You see a lot of people wanting to go see fireflies, which is as phenomenal as the fireflies, if you ask me. But they take you on a shuttle up to this area in the woods by a mountain stream. And as it starts getting dark, you start to see fireflies. And they're a little bit more blue than the fireflies here. The light is. But as best I could tell, they usually flash in sets of like five. So they'll go boop, 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 like that. Two of them will fly together in the same pattern, and they'll just go boop, 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 boop together. But then you'll be sitting in a clearing, and it'll be dark. And then all of a sudden, boop, 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 all over the place, there'll be hundreds of them all flashing with the same synchronicity. And then it'll be dark, and I counted for 5 seconds. And then they'll just all flash again. And sometimes they're synchronous and sometimes they're asynchronous, and it's like this little light show.
Is it a certain kind of firefly?
Yes.
Okay.
Photinus, I want to say Photinus carolinus or something, but I don't remember exactly.
And it's the same kind down in Malaysia.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I kind of doubt it, but
there may
don't
be different
know
kinds that do the same thing.
Yeah, and there may be a lot more that do similar things that we don't know about, but this is one place you can go see it, except this year, sold out. They do 10 days. First week in June, and then this year you have to get, and I don't know if you can go and sort of walk there, like if you're camping in the park, which is almost impossible to camp in the park. It's over a month early, and just tickets to get on the tram to go up to see them sold out. You can't do it. And so I don't know if you want to start planning for it for next year or if you want to try to go or call them up and get in. And I know there's a few places off-site that are just outside of the park that do private showings and sort of smaller clusters of them. It's an amazing phenomenon to see and just to experience hundreds of people waiting in line to go up and see fireflies.
Yeah.
It's just, and people go up there and they've got like blankets and chairs, and they bring up dinner and they sit there and they have like a little picnic and watch the fireflies. It was really quite an amazing, for someone who's liked bugs their whole lives, it's pretty amazing to see all those people interested. By the way, fireflies are really interesting, and when you see them flying around, you're seeing the males flying around flashing a particular pattern for the females, and the females basically sit in the grass and watch to see if they find the right species flashing, and when they do, they flash back in kind. They have the proper response, and then the male sees her and starts flying towards her and flashing faster, and then she starts flashing faster, and then he's and then they flash back, and then by the time he goes to land, sort of the landing area is all lit up for him to land and mate. And it's such a sweet story. And if you know enough about bugs and nature, it's never that easy for boys. There are species of females who will use a mimicking response, lure males of another species in, and when they land, they'll eat them instead of mate with them. And it turns out that the species of males that are being eaten have natural defenses against birds and spiders that the females who are eating them don't have until they eat three males of the other species. So they lure. I know that expression is exactly what you're supposed to have, because the more story. See, the thing about bugs isn't that they get in your way and they fly in your face and all that. It's that each different species of bug has this story that you think, wow, those little fellers do that. That was one of the slides in my TED
Talk.
That
was my jaw drop look. Beverly in Akron, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beverly.
Oh, hi. Listen, I've seen the spider that he had, and I just got a glimpse of it, and I'd like to know what kind of spider that is, because one was crawling on me yesterday.
All right. We'll get the fire. Let's bring out the little jumping spider.
I had to put it away because Anne was too distracted.
Well,
and
let's talk about it now.
She's working,
Because you were just letting it wander around, and
there are some bugs, like during programs, when we have I'm going to put the mantis away. I had a little four-year-old girl tell me during a birthday party one time, my mommy said you have to put your other toys away before you can get your other toys. But the jumping spider that we had out, that it's called a jumping spider. It's called Phidippus audax, the audacious or bold jumping spider.
Yes.
They are beautiful creatures that are very common. Your listener was in no danger.
It doesn't have a bite. It doesn't bite.
It does bite, but it doesn't bite people. Well, I mean, it's got to eat its food.
It's great. Okay.
It doesn't eat soup. I mean, it's got to eat its food.
I got you.
And so it can't bite people. And even if it did, one of the things about spiders, and it's true of all spiders, is that since they can't chew their food, when they eat, they use the enzymes in their spit, just like we do, to help them digest their food. Since they don't eat people, they don't waste their enzymes on us. And so spiders, as terrifying as everybody thinks they are, and we do arachnotherapy programs now. Oh. And look at you. You're squirming around. You need an arachnotherapy program. I'll tell you where to sign up for that.
I need a mic that goes with me.
But they, and so this little spider, I mean, it's sitting here walking around on my hand and jumping from one hand to another. And people say, ooh, it jumps. It's going to cling onto my face and suck the life out of me. But it won't. It just jumps because it is a hunting, stalking spider that uses visual cues. It's got very good eyesight. And if you're ever comfortable enough to let it get close enough, which clearly you're not, but if you ever are, you'll notice it's got a couple of really big eyes in
just
the front.
The host.
I have a lot of Facebook friends who feature close-up macro photos of these guys, and their faces are just unbelievable. Their behaviors are unbelievable, and their eyesight is unbelievable. Their two big eyes have four retinal planes on the back of them, and they can change the water pressure, the fluid pressure inside their eyes, so that they can actually change their field of view, which is unique among arthropods. And you can see when it jumps, it puts its little front legs out.
Oh, yeah, it's very athletic.
If I wasn't talking so much, you could hear it go to infinity and beyond.
Yes, it's very, very Buzz Lightyear looking.
It's also predictable once you get used to it. And one of the things that your listener might be interested in when she has another one on them is that you can yo-yo them, and this one just yo-ed. But if you get it calm enough, you can get it to sit on your hand, tip your hand, and it leaves a string. This one's not doing it, but it leaves a string behind it when it's hunting.
It's not a show spider.
This one's actually really fun during programs. When it does yo-yo, don't worry, it won't come that way. But you could see how slowly it fell when it went down. It always leaves a string coming out of its abdomen, and it will actually jump and catch a fly in midair. And if it doesn't land right, then it has a drawstring. I wish I could jump across this table and let you hold this on your hand.
Okay, well,
you would have such a different
vision. Wishes are cheap. Let's come back in a few minutes and see another bug. My guest is Mark Berman.
entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprise, and I hope everyone appreciates what I'm going through right now. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Lena Dunham, creator of the controversial and critically acclaimed HBO series Girls, about a group of 20-something women in New York City. Dunham plays Hannah, who has a sense of entitlement and is caught between childhood and adulthood.
She has to earn the admiration of the viewer in some way, and, you know, it's up for debate whether she ever does that.
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join us tomorrow for All Sides with Ann Fisher at 10 o'clock. Breakthroughs in research on autism and Fragile X syndrome. And then in the second hour, Tech Tuesday, a discussion of social media and politics. Also gadgetry. All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 10 until noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from Lenovo on Long Condos, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District featuring green design buildings within walking distance of local stores and restaurants. Details at homeportohio.org/Lenovo on Long.
Here's your chance to see This American Life live on Thursday, May 10th. The show is coming to the big screen. Join WOSU Public Media for This American Life live at the Lenox Town Center AMC Movie Theater this Thursday. Tickets are on sale now. For more information, visit thisamericanlife.org. Showers and thunderstorms later this afternoon, mainly after 4 o'clock, a high of 82. Rain for tonight as well, a low of 63. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprise, and we were just chatting about and averting contact with a jumping spider. Very cute, kind of Buzz Lightyear-ish, the way it propels itself through thin air. Oh, let's go. Okay.
You actually have a not surprising but... to me, kind of bothersome response to it, because you've been sitting here watching me hold this for, and I'm not trying to chastise you, but you've been sitting here watching me interact with this thing for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Nothing has happened. The only way this spider can hurt you is if you jab it in your eyeball, which is the jab it in your eyeball rule. Anything hurts when you do that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it totally can't bite you. Yeah. It's completely interactive. And you can see how when it walks around, it's almost like a cat. It's very visual. And I like it because it's one of the few bugs you can see think. And if you remember from my TED talk, it was one of the feature animals in the slides that I used. Yeah, and people always ask me what my favorite bug is, and it's a praying mantis is the easy answer. PR Mantis is our mascot, and so he was a cartoon I drew in high school because they've always been a favorite. And one of the things about a praying mantis is that it has very human-like and easy to sort of understand behaviors and actions, and you can anthropomorphize it, make it seem like a person real easily. This spider is another one. Not all spiders are like that, but a jumping spider is like that.
Yeah.
And so this is one of my favorites now, too.
Well, let's hear about what a spider Glenn wants to talk about. Glenn in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Well, hi. I'm a cross-country skier. And I have been fascinated by these little insects that can live in the snow, and spiders, too. One time I was skiing, and when I came back, I used my same tracks. It was a little easier to come back on your own tracks. And bugs that I didn't see going out appeared in the track. So I was just wondering about their life cycle. You know, do they live down in the ground and then come out when the snow is? Or if there's no snow, do they just wait till next year? Or how does that work?
What about that? Snow bugs.
It was something that I actually first learned about when I was a naturalist at an Audubon sanctuary in Massachusetts when I was in grad school. And there are these little bugs called snow fleas, technically not bugs. they're technically not fleas. They're in a group of animals called springtails or Calambula. And they very little teeny. It looks like usually on the south side of a tree or something, you'll see in the snow, the south side, because that's where the sunlight is. It almost looks like pepper. And when you look more closely, they start to jump a little bit. And so when he was skiing, it was probably on a warmish sunny day, and they were probably black-bodied animals, insects and spiders that can warm their bodies up and will come out and take advantage of being able to eat and interact with their world without worrying so much about predators in the wintertime. And they live all year long on the super, super cold days, and at night they go down under the leaf litter where it's actually kind of warm under snow cover because the snow insulates it. And so they live their whole lives able to be out in the snow and in the cold. There's even species of mosquitoes who live in water who can freeze completely and thaw out and still go through the rest of their life cycle. And they
so these snow fleas, what are they doing in the summer?
They're being dirt fleas.
They are alive and crawling around there. We just don't see them because they blend in.
Right. And actually, Glenn, a lot of the things that are alive in the wintertime a lot of the things that are alive in the summertime are alive in the winter also. They just go down under the leaf litter where it stays warm and moist, and there's even food down there. And, you know, once there's a cover of snow, if you're cross-country skiing and there's a cover of snow, underneath that you could take your glove off and slide your hand under to the leaf litter by the edge of the forest, and it'll actually feel kind of warm because there's bacteria and fungi decomposing things, and there's the life of biology giving off heat, and it gets trapped underneath the snow. So in the summertime, a lot of the animals that survive as adults or active stages go underneath there. We just don't see them then.
Thanks, Glenn, for your call. Thanks. Take care. Email from listener: my favorite bugs are praying mantis and dragonfly. The worst bugs are mosquitoes, roaches, wasps, and hornets. An email from Sharon: I am completely fascinated with praying mantises. We have collected egg cases and put them in our garden, and I am always delighted when I run across one in the garden later in the year. They are about the biggest bug you will see around here. From Scott on Facebook, he says, I always seem to find wood roaches around the house. Is this bad? Also, I have a cedar porch that carpenter bees love. Are they going to destroy my porch? So let's start with the wood roaches around the house. What's that all about?
Well, wood roaches, I mean, a cockroach is a scavenger, and so it's going to be attracted to places where there's food, which is usually, you know, like detritus and bits of food and other dead animal bodies and things like that. And so wood roaches around the house probably just means that there's refuge for them, places for them to hide. And if it bothers you, then you can go around the house and sort of create a zone of no litter, like branches and leaves and things that they won't be able to get from their normal habitat to the house, because they'll sort of be this area where they'll be exposed to predation and they won't readily go through that. So if it bothers you, they're fairly easy to get rid of if you try to clean up the areas where you see them the most, and if you make sort of this clear zone around your house. Normally I wouldn't worry about them. There are some species of cockroaches, like German cockroaches, less often American cockroaches, that will infest houses. And if you're seeing baby cockroaches in the house, in the kitchen or something, those are the kind of things to worry about. Outside visitors that are just sort of casually showing up now and then, it's up to you. I mean, a nuisance is a nuisance, and it depends on where you draw the line. I would never worry about that kind of stuff. Actually, I'd use them to feed to praying mantises probably if they were that easy.
What about carpenter bees?
Carpenter bees are interesting because, you know, again, it's a question of sort of your own personal thresholds. Carpenter bees won't do any more damage than the holes that they drill. And they're not going to drill any more holes than sort of the ones you're seeing. Certain times of the year, they look for nesting sites. And so if you see them starting to pay attention to area of wood around your house, you can put like screening up over it or foil or something that will make it not as attractive as a nesting site. For a while, they'll go find another nesting site, and you won't have to worry about it probably all summer. For me, I think they're cool. They won't do a whole lot of damage. It's not like termites where they'll continue to increase the size of their home. They just make a little nest, and that's it. And if the holes bother you, the holes bother you. If you spend a lot of money on the woodwork around your deck and the holes bother you, they're a problem and you should do something about it. As far as stinging or getting in your way or doing any more than being something that's just kind of fun to watch that makes holes in your wood, they're kind of innocuous. I think they're really cool, personally.
Max in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Max.
Hi, how you doing? Mark, good. I have a question for you that I think a lot of listeners have been asking themselves. There's always this rumor about how in your lifetime you eat 8 spiders while you sleep. Is there any validity to that statement, or is that just one of those hocus-pocus things?
Say no.
Oh, yeah. Not only spiders, but lizards and snakes, all kinds of things running here. All right. First of all.
Yeah, if you're sleeping 8 feet under me.
First of all, obviously, there's no way of officially knowing that. So then you how would you know? So then you start thinking about the bug. And if you think about a spider wandering around in your room and it sees this big, hot, open, wet area that's exuding carbon dioxide and saliva, that is not a safe place to go. So a spider is not, from what I can tell, willingly going to run into your mouth to be eaten. And so my initial impression is that, come on, man, that's crazy. However, in food, the foods that we eat on purpose, there's usually a lot of bug parts in them. And the Food and Drug Administration has, you know, threshold limits of damage that they'll allow in foods. And if you look it up, if you have a strong stomach, you'll be amazed at some of the things that are in your food. And you eat them all the time. And as a matter of fact, tomato products have the highest legal limit of bug parts in them. And so it's very fun during programs when I ask kids if they've ever eaten a bug before, and they'll be like, no, I've never eaten. And you're like, well, tomato, you know, things
just
like
one
pizza
more way to
sauce.
Turn them off to vegetables?
Or you can look at it like that. And they'll say, well, I'm never going to eat again. Yeah. And you're like, well, that's going to solve the problem. but actually, It might be one more way to turn them off from eating vegetables, but to me, it's one more way of helping them understand the world that they live in. And so eating bugs is, you know, the fact that you're eating them in your regular food and you don't know it, it isn't better to not know what you're putting in your body than to know what you're putting in your body. And we haven't gotten to the little dish of Cocoa Cruncher crickets that Anne gets to try when she wants to. We do cooking with bugs programs all the time. And I frequently make the comment that you gladly take food from a clown, walks up to you and says, here, try this McBurger. And you're like, okay, Ronald McDonald, no problem. And you don't even ask the clown what is in your food, and you're putting it in your precious body. And so, while I don't think we probably unknowingly eat spiders and other bugs in our sleep because that is not in the spider's best interest, I do know for a fact that we eat them all the time. And if we admitted it and stopped freaking out so much about it and ate more of them, crickets are a much better environmental solution than cows are. And if I don't know if you ever took a good look at a cow before, but it's a big, hairy, disgusting animal with huge
that
poop
burp,
and it
fart.
Chews on its own throw up. Cows are disgusting. But we eat them and steak tastes good. And so it's really just a mental game that we're sort of culturally playing with ourselves that's totally destructive and torturous on our environment. It's terrible.
I definitely have noticed that. I'm actually in the service. I'm actually in the Marine Corps. We have had the opportunity of eating some, I don't know what you said, insects or bugs, and there's a big hole. I don't know. But we got to eat some little critters.
Okay.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
There you go.
Like, I appreciate it.
Thank
sure
you,
thing.
Max.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Speaking of vegetables, from Larry on Facebook, are there beneficial bugs/insects for my vegetable garden?
Sure. And mostly, and Ann and I were talking about this earlier, is that most of the ones that live around here natively are going to do good things for your garden. Most of the ones that are introduced are going to do bad things for your garden. And it's just like anything else. If you plant local and you focus on native organisms, then you're going to have a much more healthy Ohio ecosystem. Since we're in Ohio, you want to look for things that have evolved to interact properly here. And you can actually help this out a lot. A lot of people will buy the praying mantis egg cases. One of the listeners was talking about that before. Horrible mistake. You don't buy something from another part of the world and let it go in your backyard.
But you might find them.
If you find them and move them a short distance from one area in Ohio, central Ohio, to another area in central Ohio, you're not really doing such a big deal. But one of the things about mantids, they're territorial predators. The babies emerge. They'd rather eat each other than other bugs because they compete with each other for food. Mm-hmm. So you put it in your garden, and the chances of one staying there, slim. Chances of all of them staying there is impossible, but mm-hmm. it's not necessarily a really good method for controlling animals. Best way to get mantids to your backyard is to have a garden and keep a light on at night, because they're going to come and see the light as hunting grounds for flying insects that are going to come at night.
Huh.
Another thing that you can do, aside from planting native plants in your garden, and a lot of times with vegetables and herbs and things, that's not going to be so possible. And, I mean, if you think about it, since we like vegetables and herbs, bugs aren't dumb. They're going to like vegetables and herbs, too, so they're going to be the ones that you're fighting against. But you can attract native pollinators and native animals and even predators with a nice array of native plants around your herb and vegetable garden. You can also plant, make like nesting sites for native bees and wasps, stingless bees and wasps, just by taking a block of wood and drilling some holes in it, or taking a bundle of sticks or bamboo and hanging it appropriately in your garden. And there are a lot of native bees and wasps that'll come to nest in there, and they'll pollinate your flowers at the same time, and you're promoting a healthy native ecosystem. And you can find out a lot more information about that just by searching for native pollinators in Ohio on Google.
Mark, we're just about out of time. Welcome to the show, though. No pressure.
Hello?
Hi, Mark. We're running out of time.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I had a question, and it's regarding arachnids. You know, some of them evidently have the ability to puncture human skin, and like the brown recluse and the black widow can actually cause harm.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any specific characteristics in spiders or in the group of arachnids that one can look for that would say, hey, you know, that one's probably not going to be a good one to get around or handle, et cetera?
How can you tell if a spider will bite then is the question. Thanks, Mark. Good question.
Yep.
Well, generally, spiders don't eat people, and spiders bite to eat, just like we do. So there isn't a spider that's going to come over to you and bite it. Spiders that can bite are going to do it if you try to hold them and they don't want to be held, or if they're in your shoe or something crazy like that. Black widows, not going to happen with. Brown recluses are very uncommon. They get talked about and blamed
The recluse thing?
Right.
Okay.
And but they get blamed for a lot more than spiders in general get blamed for a lot more than they do. But brown recluses specifically, and I just learned this last summer, that about 5% of people who get bitten by a black widow by a brown recluse have this dramatic, sexy wound that everybody always freaks out about. It's such a rare event. You just hear about it so much over and over and over
mm-hmm.
again. The fact is that there's no spider that's going to come after you to bite you. Any spider you sit and look at isn't going to be too troubled by you looking at it. If it wants to run away, it'll run away. And if you try to stop it, that's when you better know what kind of animal you're dealing with, whether it's a spider or anything else. If you don't know, looking is always okay, and you learn more. And then you go look it up. But around here especially, I mean, think about how much you've been outside. There's just nothing here that you have to be nervous about. And there's tons of stuff that if you're not nervous, you can learn and you won't believe the world you live in.
Well, Mark Berman, thank you so much for joining
can
us.
We do
don't
more?
Open.
Please.
I don't
I'm
know what that
open.
Is.
No, he was talking about cool arachnids.
Yeah.
Check this out. Can we do more? And
oh, my God. God.
Look at how awesome that
what
bug is.
What is that?
I know.
Okay, you'd have to be watching on TV or online, so I would recommend checking
like
this out online. Right now we have to go. If you want to find out, maybe Mark Berman will post online what
have us to your schools too.
That alien animal is. Thanks for listening. The Allside staff, they appreciate some things as well. Producer Linda Taylor, associate producer Amy Jurovich, Allside's intern Corinne Gleckler, Allside's production assistant Katie Higgins, high school intern Gracie Bachman, Allside's volunteer Kaitor Kapsoa, with video production by Rich and Amber Karsmiski. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.